Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 85, New Horizons. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hey, Chris.
Howdy. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo, and considering that the Switch released last week along with The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, there's plenty to talk about. It really doesn't get any bigger than that, so instead of having a specific big topic, we're just going to focus on those two items in this episode. Since there is so much, let's not waste any time, let's jump right into it and start talking about the launch of Nintendo's newest system, the Nintendo Switch. Scott, how did launch go for you?
It went great. I got my Switch at like, I want to say 4 p.m. on the 3rd, so on release day.
On launch day? Okay.
Yeah, which is fine.
And you ordered it from Best Buy, right?
I ordered it from Best Buy. It came pretty much on time. I mean, it said by 8 p.m., so that was fine with me. I guess if I really wanted to play it first thing, I would have lined up at a store for a midnight launch, but I didn't know which stores were going to be doing that. I thought the safe bet was to pre-order, and it worked out for me, but I understand other people pre-ordering, not getting it in time and saying, screw it, I'll just stand in line at my local video game store, get it at midnight, and then I'll either sell the one I have or keep it in the closet for posterity. I don't know.
Yeah, both of us pre-ordered online. It seemed like the best way to do it. It seemed easy, convenient, don't have to stand any lines like we did for the NES Classic or anything like that. That seemed like the smart way to go about it. It didn't work out that well for me, though.
Yeah, and I heard a lot of stories about people's pre-orders getting canceled, but that's not quite what happened to you, right?
No, mine did not get canceled. And I didn't hear a lot about people's getting canceled. I heard about Amazon having a lot of delays, and I ordered mine from Target, and it also suffered quite a delay. I was given free shipping, and for some reason they decided free shipping meant being shipped on the back of a snail. So it was like, it took forever. It didn't arrive until yesterday. I finally got the darn
thing. Oh my gosh. Wow. That's really late. So how did you deal with the amount of time you had to wait?
Well, I didn't really have to worry about that because on Friday morning, the day it launched, I decided I'm just going to go out to Target and see what they've got there, mostly because I wanted to see if they had Breath of the Wild for Wii U.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to check that out and see if that was out there and just see how things were going, see how the launch went. Mm-hmm. But I got there and it turned out, lo and behold, they actually had a couple Switch systems to sell. They actually had two systems as I walked in there.
Oh, wow.
One person was asking for it, and I'm like, did you say you have two? Because I know who number two on that list is going to be. And so I snagged it. And yeah, that was like an hour and 15 minutes after they had opened. So I was pretty surprised. They told me that they got in about 80 systems.
Mm-hmm.
They had about 50 people lined up to get them, and so the remainder were sold to walk-ins pretty much. So I kind of lucked out. There were a bunch of people that came up right behind me trying to get one, and they had to tell them, nope, the last systems are spoken for. So I lucked out, and I've been playing that system ever since.
Yeah.
And the other one that finally arrived in the mail yesterday, I'm going to take that one back.
So this is something I'm hearing a lot, which is people pre-ordering it taking longer than, you know, the requisite day that it takes to get to you on launch day. And people saying, oh, well, I'll just go out, buy one at retail, and then sell the one I have, which is a totally valid thing. But unfortunately, that people are now having to go to a secondary market to get a Switch. So now you're responsible for that problem, Chris Hoffman.
Well, I'm going to take it back to the store. People buy it right off the shelf at Target. So.
Oh, are you? Okay. So you're going to return it to Target.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to go back as soon as possible.
Great.
Probably we're done recording today's episode.
That's very altruistic of you. I like that. Because I know a lot of people would just go to eBay and, you know, get their, $60 on top of whatever the system sold for, which is kind of dirty, but...
Yeah, I have no interest in doing that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that aside, aside from getting the system, what did you think once you finally received it, took it out of the box, started playing with it? I was pretty happy with how easy it was to just get things hooked up and started and start playing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the interface was very snappy as well. And, everything, it ran really, really well as far as the basics went for just, getting it out and turning it on. Things were going much, much faster than they went with a Wii U.
Yes, and there was a day one update, and that
installed
within, Like, I was like, oh gosh, it's going to take an hour to update. You know, this is kind of the deal with Xbox and PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. But mine took like a minute or two.
Mine took less than that, it felt like. I hit the update button, and before I knew it, it was ready to go. And I was able to play Zelda while it installed, but I was like, oh, I'll just update and wait and see what happens and check out the eShop.
Yeah, I got my Zelda after I got everything else.
Okay.
So, I turned it on. It was just fooling around with the eShop, took care of the updates, got all that stuff out of the way before I actually started playing, because my Zelda didn't arrive until very late on Friday, and I didn't even really get to dig into it for a while after that, but we'll get to that later.
The most striking thing for me was, well, I had never held one before, so how small it is, how crisp everything on the screen looks. So all of my complaints about screen resolution, not necessarily valid. I can still see the pixels when I play in bed, but for the most part, it's not a big deal.
So you've been mostly using it in handheld mode, or have you been using it in both?
I've been using it mostly in handheld mode, surprisingly. There's many reasons for that, the least of which is I have a child I'm taking care of, my son. So it's just a lot of running around the house, you know, up and down, in the middle of the night feedings, that kind of thing. So it's very easy to have this next to the bed. So if I have to stay up while he's feeding and then help my wife put him back down to bed, I can pick it up, play for 10 minutes and put it back down.
Understandable. I've mostly been using it in docked mode myself. I basically had in handheld mode to do the initial setup, put it in the dock, and it's kind of stayed there ever since.
Because
I do not have those kinds of concerns, so I've just been using it on the TV. Have you had any issues with the screen? Any of the pixel problems or scratching or anything like that?
No, not at all. So I am on a pretty popular forum where people are posting videos that other people are finding of either scratch tests on the screen or problems with the controller desyncing or problems with pixels like either stuck or off, which means like there's little black dots on the screen.
Yeah.
That's not a problem I had. I'm guessing, as with any new device, there are these QA issues with a handful of systems. Nintendo's response is and this is the same thing that Apple says, there is a minimum number of pixels that have to be burnt out before we will take it back, you know, if you want to send it back to us. Here's the thing, take it back to your retailer, they have to give you your money back or a new system. This is the law, at least in the US. So if you got a system and it's not 100% perfect, if the box is dented, you can bring it back to the store. It's illegal for them to not take it back if you have a receipt. So do not fret if you have something wrong with your Switch, bring it back. I had none of these problems. I also watched a video of somebody doing a scratch test on the screen. I just assumed the screen was glass. It is not.
Nope. It is plastic.
The screen on the Switch is plastic. That means it is prone to scratching, very similar to the Wii U. That said, if you're very careful with your device, hey, you know, go crazy, go wild, don't throw a screen protector on it. I can't live like that. So I bought a really great glass screen protector from Amazon. I'll post a link or we'll tweet a link to the thing I bought. It's great. You can't even tell there's a protector on the screen. Screen protectors have come a long way since 2004. There's no bubbles under my screen. It looks just like the actual screen. The touch screen works perfectly underneath the protector. It's glass, so it's super hard and very scratch resistant. And if it gets a scratch, hey, throw out the screen protector and get a new one. This was a $10 screen protector. It came
A $30 screen protector, according to the MSRP, but you can get it for only like $10 or $11.
That's right. It's $30 retail on Amazon. It's like $10, $12. And it comes with two. And that's important because the first one I applied had dust underneath it. And with this kind of screen protector, if there's dust underneath it, once you lay it down, you have to pick the screen up off the... You have to pull it off, and you can't.
Yeah, you can't just flatten it out.
You can't just reapply it. The problem is the back of the glass protector has like an adhesive on it. Removing dust from that adhesive is super, super difficult. So it's not like one of these static cling screen protectors. It's actually got a kind of a sticky adhesive on it. Anyway, if you have a Switch, definitely get a screen protector. It scratches very easily, and there are hearing reports about people's docks not being manufactured perfectly. They're kind of bent a little bit. The plastic bends in, and so when you're sliding Switch in, it actually is scratching the screen in the dock, so your dock could scratch your screen. I'm the kind of person that if I get a scratch on my screen, I'm really heartbroken, so...
Yeah, I don't want mine to get scratched either. Like I said, I'm not really planning to be taking it in and out of the dock a whole bunch, but I also grabbed one of those screen protectors. I'll be putting it on there ASAP. But, you know, for now, everything is working fine. And I've heard from some people that some kinds of screen protectors, you know, don't really work well with the dock. Either they would, you know, fall off or they wouldn't really fit. But this is not one of those. This one works and stays on great as far as you're concerned.
That's right. And the reviews on Amazon back that up. It's got like 5-star reviews all over.
Yeah, it's like their best-selling Switch accessory.
So you will see that. And honestly, I say it's the one accessory you should not live without. It's really important to protect the screen because that's everything on this device.
Now, that aside, one other thing I was really impressed by with the Switch is the fact that it has CEC, Consumer Electronics Control. And if you're not familiar with that term, what that means is it can interact with your other electronic devices via the HDMI cable. And so when I turn on the Switch, it also turns on my TV and sets the correct input channel.
Yeah.
And that varies depending on your TV. But for me, this was just mind-blowing. It was like, oh my gosh, what kind of technical wizardry is this that allows such a brilliant thing where I no longer have to manually change my input? Like, why doesn't every system have this? I'm really impressed they put that into the Switch, and I love it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's enabled by default, and I guess that's why people are saying, oh, it's turning my TV on.
Yeah, some people, when they dock it, if it's still on, then it can, like, you know, change the channel on you, and you're like, what the heck's going on here? But, so if that is causing a problem, people can just go into, it's like settings, TV settings, match power. So you can turn that off if it bugs you. But for me, since I've been keeping it docked like I have, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's pure magic. I love it.
So you texted me about this, and I have a very new TV. It's from, like, November. It's an LG. So I was like, wow, that sounds like magic. My TV hasn't exhibited that, so I just assumed my TV doesn't have it. But I looked into the instruction manual online, and it said you have to enable this. It's called, for LG TVs, I think it's called Smart Link or something like that. It's got some proprietary name. But once I enabled it, yes, my TV does exactly what yours does, which is if I power on the Switch, the TV turns on and it switches the HDMI input over to the one that the Switch is on, which is super cool. Yes. So I think that's super cool and handy. I have heard reports of people's Switches constantly grabbing away the HDMI input from their whatever they're currently using. So that's a problem. And in that case, you should probably turn that off.
All right. And that's usually people, I think, who are docking and undocking and things of that nature. And also just turning it off before you dock it would probably help with it too.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the eShop?
It's pretty slim pickings right now, and browsing it is just a one-screen affair, so it's not like you're going to do any searching.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, you can't search. I guess you can search, but there's no curation. There's nothing.
There's
nothing. It's so un-Nintendo-like. I was really amazed.
It's just a bucket of games on one screen. Now, I think that's going to change.
You think? I hope so.
When there's 100 games in the store, there's going to have to be some categorization where I can see strategy games, action games, retro games, virtual console. And it all has to be separated out, but multiplayer.
Yeah, but right
games.
Now it just feels like they just threw this thing up there. Like, does it work? Okay, it works. In that case, we're done for now. We'll come back and revisit this in a few months.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like they spent a lot of time getting that ready.
Well, it doesn't feel like a Nintendo interface at all.
No,
you know, there's no music.
There's no music.
No fun.
I was just going to say that.
There's no curation.
And I love the eShop. I've just always loved the eShop music. I know people love the eShop music so much that there are YouTube videos of just a loop of eShop music, and people complain when they cycle out certain tracks out of the 3DS eShop because they get or they fall in love with some of these tracks. So that's not very Nintendo. A lot about this system isn't very Nintendo, for better and for worse.
That is true. That is true. You know, aside from this bare bones eShop, where it's like, you know, I wanted to check out a demo, I wanted to grab some DLC, and it's like you can't even those categories don't exist. You just have to go into Snipperclips, know the demo exists, and download it.
Yeah.
You have to just go into Zelda, know that the DLC exists, and download it.
Yeah, it's funny you said that about the DLC because I just assumed that was going to be in the eShop, and I didn't see it there, so I haven't yet. Gotten the DLC, and it's something I need to do.
Yeah, it is in there, but you have to click on Buy Zelda for $59.99, and then it's in that page.
Gosh.
So that's exactly what I'm talking about, how it's not organized in any conceivable good way. So yeah, that's where it is.
Yeah.
It's just on the game's main page, but it looks like you're trying to buy the game when you're just trying to look for, you know, other stuff.
Yeah,
like
that's
that. So yeah,
they got to fix that because they're not going to sell a lot of DLC to hiding it in there.
So that's a little odd. The fact that it's really hard to import your Miis, also not super Nintendo-like and surprising. And it wasn't really intuitive how to link the My Nintendo account. So getting everything hooked up and starting to play and going online was really easy. But, you know, doing all these extra things, I thought, was surprisingly non-intuitive.
Yeah, Nintendo, they've made great strides in getting a unified Nintendo account. But at this point, I believe it's 4 Nintendo accounts. I have a Nintendo Network ID, I have a Nintendo account, and I have a My Nintendo Club Nintendo account that's still, I don't even know, do I use that to log into
My
Nintendo?
It's a little bit confusing.
It is super confusing. So
I have mine tied to my email, so I typed in my email and typed in the password I knew I used, so... Mm-hmm. It worked out for me, but yeah, I can understand how it can be kind of confusing.
Yeah, and getting a Mii on your system requires an amiibo, is that right?
As far as I can tell, yes.
So you need an amiibo to like lifeboat it over from one system
to
another.
Yeah, you have to assign a Mii to your amiibo,
okay.
And then if it's assigned to it, then you can transfer it over really easily.
It's bizarre.
It doesn't feel like that was something it was really designed to do.
No,
it's just like, oh, by happy coincidence, this works.
It's funny. So one glaring thing missing from the Switch, and this can be fixed with the Joy-Con, is, believe it or not, and I know it was like worthless on the Wii U, but the a camera, some sort of camera, because to be able to scan QR codes, to be able to do AR, augmented reality, you need either a front-facing or a rear-facing camera. I know a Joy-Con will solve this problem, an AR Joy-Con, and I'm assuming this was a cost-cutting thing for Nintendo to not include any sort of camera functionality, because with the 3DS, you frame up your face, it looks at your face, it analyzes it, and you get a Mii out of that. And that was also the case with the Wii U, and it felt very magical.
Really? Because whenever I did it, it looked like a mutant freak came out. I'm like, this looks nothing like me. This is hideous.
For some reason, I usually kept the Miis that it made for me just because it was pretty good. Surprisingly, but may not work for everybody. That said, not a huge deal. And again, I feel like this was a cost-cutting thing, as was having a plastic screen, as was having, I don't know, there was just some design choices with this system that are frustrating people. Like, you can put the Joy-Con strap holder on the wrong way, on the wrong Joy-Con, and it will get stuck on there almost permanently, and you need to use like a nail file or something to pop it off, which is scary. So when you're sliding when you're sliding the grips on the individual Joy-Cons, just be very mindful. You're putting the plus one on the plus side and the minus one on the minus side, because they look identical, and it's very easy to mess that up. So just don't let your kids just start willy-nilly forcing these on, because they will get stuck, and you may have to like break the strap to get it off there. So be careful.
Yikes. Speaking of the Joy-Cons, have you had any of that syncing problem that a lot of people have been experiencing?
None, but I'm in a relatively small room. I'm like, I don't know, 6 feet from my giant television. So no, but it is an issue and people are having
I've definitely heard it from some of my friends that they're having problems and has led to a number of untimely deaths especially Breath of the Wild. It's like, oh, it wasn't doing anything, and then it just started running, and I ran off a cliff, and I died.
Yeah, so the pathetic solution to that is you need to buy a Pro Controller, which is really pathetic.
Well, I bought a Pro Controller anyway. That's the way I wanted to play. I wanted to have something with a control pad on it, and I just liked the feel of it. I thought it felt really, really good to use when I played it for demonstration purposes, and so I love it. I've been using that almost exclusively. It still has motion control. Mm-hmm. It still has amiibo functionality. I think it's still got HD Rumble. And so far, I'm really, really happy with it. And I suppose not having the syncing problems is an added bonus.
The folks that are having these syncing problems, there's a lot of hope that Nintendo might be able to fix this with a software patch, but it seems like
that would be nice.
It seems like it's hardware related. It seems like the FCC specs are online, so you can see exactly what the system is doing regarding like frequencies and output strength and that kind of thing. All that. So with the right Joy-Con, the wireless antenna is outputting a stronger signal than the left left Joy-Con just by...
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
So it's like...
So that's why the left Joy-Con is having problems and the right one isn't.
It's like a half dB.
How bizarre.
It's like a half dB of gain on the signal for the right Joy-Con that the left Joy-Con doesn't. Also, the left Joy-Con, there's a metal box that's near the antenna for the left Joy-Con. So that could also be interfering with the reception of the left Joy-Con. So if you hold it in a weird way... If you hold it, not that you can hold it wrong, kind of like the iPhone 4, where, you know, you're holding it wrong is the reason why the signal's bad. But if you hold it in a non-standard way, it will desync, even if you're relatively close to the device. Also, Nintendo's recommended turning off other appliances. They've suggested moving the Switch away from your wireless router at least 5 feet. So other signals are messing with the signals of the left Joy-Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that might be a problem.
There's a guy online who soldered a wire into the antenna on the left Joy-Con, rerouted where the signal would get picked up towards the bottom of the Joy-Con, where your hand would usually never cover the Joy-Con up, and he got like 30 feet from his... or 40 feet from his Switch, and he still had perfect signal strength. Even better than his right Joy-Con. So that was a fix, but it was a hardware fix.
Yeah,
so,
that would be tough to do, I think, for the average player.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's going to be doing any soldering on their Joy-Con, but I expect in the next 6 months or so, Nintendo will probably fix this issue, and newer Joy-Cons won't have this syncing issue. But that is a huge problem. If I ran into this problem on launch day, I'd be heartbroken because I didn't buy a pro controller, so I'd have to play it in handheld mode or nothing, because if you can't play docked, what are you gonna do, move your chair closer to the TV or move your TV closer to your chair? That's just silly. Or move the whole console closer to you. It's a whole bunch of jumping through hoops that shouldn't be necessary for a $300 console. So
yeah, totally. It's definitely unfortunate.
Yeah, some corners were cut here and there, and it's proving itself to be problematic for some people, but I haven't had any problems. So far
I've been loving it. I've been having a great time with it myself. But again, I haven't been using a lot of these features that have been causing people trouble. So when it comes to games, what else did you get other than The Legend of Zelda? For me personally, I did not get anything else so far.
Really?
I did grab the demo for Snipper Clips.
Yeah, okay.
While I was waiting for Zelda to come in, I grabbed that, gave it a try. It was the exact same demo that they had available for people to play at these various Switch events. The only difference was this time I played it solo instead of in co-op. And really, the game is made for co-op. It's basically like The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes, where you can do it in single player, but you're not really supposed to. You just tag back and forth between the different characters, and you play it that way, but it is a less than ideal situation.
Yeah, I would say Snipper Clips is a super bad game if you're just playing it one player. It's just not worth playing. But that is the other game I got. I got Zelda and I got Snipper Clips. And we had a friend over and we played Snipper Clips for like, I don't know, 30 minutes or so. We unlocked a whole page of levels and moved into the next level, which was like this retro futuristic arcadey looking thing. But we didn't start playing those next levels, but we unlocked a whole page of levels. So it was fun. I had a lot of fun. I hadn't played Snipper Clips. I had seen it played online and on the Nintendo Treehouse stream. I saw them playing it. It looked like a lot of fun. And I thought, oh, what a great party game. You can play it with up to four people, I think. But we only had two.
I didn't know that.
We only have two Joy-Cons. I know 1-2 Switch has been like not received very positively, and it's pretty much what I thought it was.
Anyway.
For $50, a collection of what amounts to tech demos for this system is not worth picking up. But it shows off.
I have heard from a friend that brought it to a kid's birthday party. And it was like, people loved it. It was like people going crazy for it.
Whoa.
So, maybe you and me, it's not really the best purchase. But if you're in, junior high or younger, it's probably great. Or if you're in some sort of party scenario, I'm sure there are wonderful drinking games for it. Drinking milk, of course, as is the Nintendo way. But for a lot of gamers, for the core audience, it's probably not really for them.
Yeah, I don't ever think I'll be getting 1-2 Switch unless it goes on sale for like $10. It should have been a pack-in. I'm not sure why it wasn't. If this were a pack-in game, I would have thought completely delightful. What a great idea. But this is feeling a lot like Nintendo Land, which was just kind of a forgettable experience that I don't think is worth $50 $50 to play.
Yeah, and when I check my friends list, like literally everybody who is currently active is playing The Legend of Zelda. Yeah. So I'm not sure anything else is really getting played these days anyway.
Yeah, people are referring to the system as the, you know, jokingly but half seriously, as the Zelda machine. And for that, for me, it really has been that. I'm actually glad it didn't launch with another A-list title, because I don't know if I would have been able to devote any other time to any other game other than Zelda. And so that was very smart move, because if they launched a Mario alongside of this game, I think the Mario would have, even if it was the best Mario game in 15 years, it would have just been an also-ran, and an unfortunately, like, people would have had to make a decision, should I buy this game or that game, and Zelda's always going to come first.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh.
I think if Odyssey were out, then... And that would be getting a lot of acclaim too. But totally, you know, I've got games on my 3DS I can't play. I've got a brand new game that I got for PS4 and it's just sitting there shrink-wrapped. So it's like, you know, it would be great if something else were out, but I'm just going to be playing Zelda anyway. So, you know, that's how it rolls. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I am kind of surprised, though, that you haven't picked up Shovel Knight yet.
No, I don't know why I was waiting. Mostly because I don't see myself getting into Shovel Knight while I have Zelda to play.
I think that I'm in the same situation. I really do want to play that new Specter Knight campaign, but I've got Zelda here. The update will be coming soon for free on other systems. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, I'll dig in and I'll experience that, and hopefully I'll be able to talk about how that is really, really soon. But for now, Breath of the Wild is keeping me pretty well occupied.
Yeah. The other nice thing about this device is the screen. The colors on the screen are really great. So with the Wii U, you may or may not have noticed, but with bright reds and maybe even other like neon-y colors, there's a lot of color bleed around the edges of the pixels, because it really just...
Can't say I did.
It hated certain colors, and... the Switch seems to faithfully reproduce every color that's thrown at it, and with no weird pixel bleed thing happening or weird artifacts cropping up around like bright colors. So that's really great.
That's good.
Just one more thing to note, which is the interface is so snappy that it feels like an Apple device, which is, I think, the biggest compliment I can pay to this device. So it really feels... one-to-one, you press, it does the thing. Waiting to launch games and going from area to area in the menu isn't this awful experience as it is on the 3DS and the Wii U, where, like, if you go into system settings, the dang thing has to reboot when you leave the system settings on the 3DS, which is bananas. So the fact that that isn't happening with the Switch is a real breath of fresh air. Pretty happy about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to be happy about with the system. You know, it's not perfect, but so far, I'm really digging it. And apparently, it's Nintendo's fastest-selling console launch ever. Like, in its first 2 days, it broke the records set even by the Wii.
I'm blown away by that. The fact that it actually is outpacing the Wii, I think, is a lot due to the fact that they had enough systems on hand to meet the demand. I think they learned a big lesson with the Wii launch, and then they...
Maybe something from the NES Classic as well.
With the Wii U, I don't know if there was ever a time when I couldn't just walk into a store and pick up a Wii U.
No, that was always easy to get.
I think with this system, I think they realized they had something special and they really did need to ramp up production and make sure that they retailers are getting them, and they're getting them fast and furious, and hopefully they're getting restocks as soon as they can. So, and I hear restocks are on their way to a lot of stores. And when I was looking at Brick Seeker, which is the place where I'm going to find out what inventory is happening at different big box retailers like Walmart and Target, it looked like a lot of places were getting upwards of 70 and 80 units per store. And these aren't even like big downtown stores. These are like out in the middle of nowhere stores. So that's really great news. And the fact that I think in some areas you could still walk into a Walmart or a Target or a Best Buy and get a Switch right now, as long as the scalpers didn't get there first.
Yeah, it seems to be off to a really good start. Nintendo just needs to keep it up and fulfill all those promises and all that potential. And you know, hopefully it'll pan out to be one of their best systems ever.
Yeah.
Before we change gears here and start discussing Zelda Breath of the Wild in depth, I would like to address one bit of listener mail that came in. This one comes from a listener, Shu X, and he's responding to our list of best and worst system launches from last week. He writes, Regarding the poor showing at the launch of the DS, I don't think Super Mario 64 DS gets enough credit for the great minigames that used both the touchscreen and the dual screens in fun, if simple, ways. The slingshot games on the touchscreen were really satisfying, and Luigi's Picture Poker was probably my most played game for a long time on the DS. Also, the Game Boy Color came out on the same day as Ocarina of Time, so I think those of us who bought both weren't too troubled by the lack of a defining release for it. It was basically a minor visual upgrade to Pokemon Red and Blue while we were away from Hyrule. So first of all, to address what he said about Super Mario 64, I don't think that game was, you know, really bad by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Super Mario 64 is an excellent game, and the new stuff they put in was really good. They add in new characters, which was really great. They add in, you know, new minigames that were pretty darn cool. You know, just the only problem was that it didn't have that analog control, but if it had, it would have been amazing. So I don't want to say it was a bad game by any stretch, but, you know, by virtue of the lack of analog and the fact that there was, you know, nothing else really to hang their hat on for the system, I still stand by DS being one of their worst system launches. But yeah, I'd love to see, like, a definitive version of Mario 64 that had, you know, all that stuff and real analog control. That would be just awesome. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the Game Boy Color coming out on the same day as Ocarina of Time, yeah, that wasn't really something I was really thinking about too heavily when I was giving it my my ranking as my least favorite system launch. But if anything, I think that's actually another strike against the system, because you've got a brand new system coming out on the same day as a huge console release. And if you're going to do that, you should really have a compelling reason to make people go get that system. That should have a really great launch lineup. But, you know, in retrospect, it just seems like, well, maybe they shouldn't have done that on the same day. I don't really understand why they would do that. Why take people's attention away from one or the other? So, yeah, that was just kind of weird. But it does probably explain why Link's Awakening DX didn't come out on the same day and, you know, wait about another month, because they didn't need two Zeldas on the same day, I suppose. But yeah, I don't think that's a great excuse for having such a lackluster launch line.
I think it highlights how Nintendo's handheld and home console divisions kind of didn't seem like they were talking to each other very much over the last 15, 20 years. I don't think Nintendo of today would ever launch a game like Breath of the Wild against another handheld. Like that just it would boggle my mind if they... You know,
not like that, but it was a few years ago that they released Super Mario 3D World on the same day that they did A Link Between Worlds on 3DS.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah, so that was, yeah, that was pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the things that is going to probably change if the Switch ends up becoming their one and only focus over the next few years.
Yeah, playing this system, going back to the Switch and how, you know, the launch went, but just in my first 5 minutes with this system, I thought there's no way that they'll live without having a low-priced handheld to augment their bottom line. They need something like a 3DS. They need a cheaper handheld unit that a 8-year-old can bang around with. I think Nintendo, they're always going to have like a 2DS for kids to drool and, you know, spit on, and they don't have that right now. I would never hand my...
That's true. It's definitely not a kid's
system. I would
system.
Not handle this Switch to a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old. I just don't think they'd treat it with the level of care it would need, because it is not the most robust system. If you drop this, it will break. It will scratch. The Joy-Cons will pop off. The kids are going to lose one of the Joy-Cons. The battery life isn't nearly as good for what an 8-year-old's going to do to this machine. So I just don't see a world where this can be their only system. They're going to have another handheld. But if you disagree with me, let me know on Twitter. I want to hear about it.
Well, for now, they've got the 3DS and the 2DS. But yeah, as that system continues to age, they are going to need something to get young gamers on board. And whether it's a brand new dedicated handheld or a simplified Switch that's much more robust and is just designed as a handheld unit that can't fall apart when you drop it and hopefully won't get damaged. You're absolutely right. But as far as hearing from people goes, I'd love to hear our listeners' additional thoughts on what they thought of the Switch and what they thought of the launch and how everything is going for them. So if you guys got any comments, it'd be great to hear them.
I agree, definitely.
All right, this seems like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that. And when we come back, we will dive deep into The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. All right, we are back and we are ready to continue this week's episode with our discussion of The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And Scott, I don't know about you, but so far I am pretty blown away by this game. I mean, where do you even start discussing it?
I don't know. Should we throw up a spoiler warning? We're not going to spoil this game, right? We're not going to talk about any specifics.
There might be a couple spoilers, maybe, but I'm not that super far into it or anything.
Okay, so for
could
folks,
be a spoiler
have,
too.
Have you left the plateau?
Oh, I've definitely left the plateau. You better believe it.
Let's spoiler warn anything that's off the Great Plateau.
Okay, will do.
And for anyone who's listening who hasn't played any Zelda whatsoever, the game starts on the Great Plateau, so that's not a spoiler. But we'll preface anything with a spoiler if we think it's going to ruin your enjoyment of the game.
I don't plan on giving out any story spoilers or anything
okay,
like that,
so,
but
yeah,
there might be a couple things that are considered
okay.
spoilers
All
nonetheless.
Right.
So that's fair warning.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything about this game, it's just so majestic. And, you know, no pun intended, but breathtaking.
It's magical.
It's magical. It's mysterious.
Yeah.
And everywhere I go and everything I see, I just want to explore. It really does do a great job of, you know, fulfilling that sense of wonder and imagination that, you know, the original Legend of Zelda game was all about. And yes, it does continue that fantastically.
It does. The mood of the music changes when you turn a corner and something, you know, mysterious or cool is going to happen, or there's a secret somewhere and the music gives you a little hint that there's something there that you should, you know, keep your eye out for.
Yeah, the music is very minimalist, but
yeah.
It does a really good job just like cluing you in and being like, hey, there might be something here. Pay attention.
Yep. The scope of the world that this game is in, I can't even comprehend, because I'm only like, I want to say 10 hours into this game, and it's enormous.
It is huge. It's gotta be the biggest game I've ever played.
I've played games that have only existed within the realm of that Great Plateau, and that very, very small portion of the rest of this game. Once you leave that Great Plateau, the overworld in this game is absolutely just mind-bogglingly large.
Yeah, they've said it's like 2% of the game, and I don't even know if that's accurate. It feels almost smaller than that, but yeah, the whole game map is just ridiculously huge. And, you know, I'm sure this has been said before, I'm sure Nintendo has pointed this out, but if you can see it in the distance, you can actually go there. You can run and climb and swim and dive and fly and actually get to that thing you see way, way, way off there. It might take you a long, long time, but you can do it.
Yeah, walking on foot, I feel like it will just take... I'm sure there's going to be a video posted about walking from one end to the other and how long it might take, but I'm going to guess it at like, I don't know, at least a couple hours.
Yeah, I would think so.
I've only played like 10, 12 hours, but I've just loved absolutely every minute. I can't wait to play more.
Yeah, exactly. I just can't put the darn thing down. This is like the ultimate in, you know, just 5 more minutes suddenly turning into sitting there for an hour or two. Everywhere I go, there is just something to catch my attention. It's like, wow, I just, you know, love these beautiful, beautiful vistas and, you know, and exploring this environment. And you could just run around that, but it's like, okay, so I'm going to just go and do my story objective. I'm going to follow the main quest here. But then it's like, oh, there's a person. He's giving me a side quest. Oh, I'm going to do the side quest. Oh, and there's a shrine over there. I'm going to go over and do this shrine.
Exactly.
That's how puzzles are integrated into the game.
Yeah.
You know, the puzzles aren't really in the overworld for the most part. You know, they're in these shrines. You go in there and, you know, they have these puzzles that are very distinct from the exploration. And I think that's a great way to integrate them into this kind of game. It's also a great way to break up the exploration and the fighting with something that just feels distinct and different. Especially, you know, with how realistic everything is, it'd be weird if you just had some, you know, arbitrary block pushing puzzle out in the middle of this field or something like that.
I feel like that would break the game in some way. I like that those really like planned out puzzle areas are hidden away, and the overworld is really more about, and I think that goes back to the original Legend of Zelda, where the overworld wasn't really a place where puzzle solving happened. It was more of a place for exploration and figuring out how to get from point A to point B using the...
Yeah, well, it had some of that, you know, burning every shrub and things like that. That was sort of a puzzle.
That's true. But, you know, getting from point A to point B...
But yeah, the dungeons were more the...
What's in my bag of tricks that I can pull out to work around this piece of the environment that's trying to prevent me from accessing it. Like if there's an area, can I get to it from above? Can I, oh, there's a platform, but there's no ladder to it. So how do I get there? Well, there's probably 8 ways to skin that cat. You could stack boxes up. You could drop down from up high. You can try to chuck something up there to get what you want down off of there. So there's so many cool, fun, creative ways to solve things. The fact that this is a game with a physics engine that actually works, my gosh.
Yes, that's, I'm amazed by that.
It blows me away. It blows me away.
Most games I've played that have real physics engines are just, you know,
goofy.
It's like they're frustrating. They don't really work.
They're like,
you're supposed to try this thing and hopefully it goes where it's supposed to, but you can try it like 50 times and it doesn't happen. But in this game, it works really well. I mean, I think they're probably cheating it a little bit, but they, you know, they nailed it. They got it perfect where it has that excellent balance between realistic physics and actually being fun and usable. So, man, they just totally nailed that. And it's the first time I've really enjoyed physics-based puzzles, I would say. It's great.
It is. And you have powers that allow you to interact with the world in a way that, you know, I think average Link couldn't. So that makes it just as a layer.
Well, it gives you everything right at the beginning. It gives you all the tools you would normally be getting from dungeons. They're like, boom, here you go.
Yep.
Right at the beginning, you have the magnets to lift things and the bombs to blow things up.
Oh, wait, this is spoilers.
Said it's on the plateau. This is all on the plateau stuff. And all that stuff is right there at the very beginning.
Yep.
Those 4 or 5 main powers you get. But just like the game, I went off track. So I just started talking about all this different stuff as I was going down this list of, you know, ironically, distractions. Because it's like, oh, and now I'm going to take, you know, photos of things and hunt down Koroks and just gather loot. Just gathering stuff in the environment, grabbing mushrooms and apples and harvesting all this thing that you can use for, you know, cooking. There's like apparently a zillion recipes in there that you can use to restore your health and give yourself additional powers, doubling your health or your strength or your defense or something. And you know, all that stuff is in there. And then these random mini-bosses that come out of nowhere. And so between all that stuff, it's like either an OCD person's dream or nightmare game. I'm not sure which it is.
That's right. If you want to, if you're like a collect
so
them all.
So much.
Yeah. If you want to collect them all and do all the things, I would love to hear from Nintendo how many hours they think it might take to do everything. But if we're going to say everything, like 100% everything, and you've seen every square inch of the land and done all the things, I bet there's over 100 hours here.
I'll bet way over 100 hours. I was thinking 100 at first, but I'll bet it's way more than that.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow.
I'm actually using the parental control app because that actually tracks your playtime. So
interesting.
I don't think that the system itself does that.
Okay.
But if you have the parental control app, it does keep track of how much you've been playing. And so I'll use that and see how much I've been playing. And I'm sure it's going to be like hundreds of hours. It's going to be insane because there is just so much to do. And, you know, for the most part, it's really, really fun. I should also say that I just love the world design. It just feels really natural. I love how vertical it is, how they took that third dimension into account really, really well. I mean, obviously, we've been playing 3D Zelda games for, you know, for ages, for almost 20 years now. But this is the first time it really feels like it's used that third dimension, the way you're just scaling peaks and looking down from towers and mountains and all that stuff. It's like, wow, this is what 3D gaming is all about. This is how you really, really use that third dimension. It's just awe-inspiring. And I love the towns, too. Each one is distinct and unique and actually feels like a real lived-in place. And the weather. I love the weather.
The weather. Yeah, it makes it so moody. And I don't want to get to a summation thing right away, but I don't think it's hyperbole to say this game is going to change these open world games forever. I don't think people are now going to accept what kind of games they've previously been playing, and they're going to look more towards a game like this for where video games need to head to keep people happy and entertained. Because I don't think there's going to be any going back with the, like you were saying, the verticality of the world, and you know, there's a craggy rock face and you can climb it, and there's a boulder up high and you can leap over it, and you can, you know, blast it off the hill and make it roll down. The fact that there's this, the physics engine is so spot on, the fact that it really feels like you can go anywhere and do anything. And I feel like a lot of games where it's like, oh, you can climb over that mountain, but, you know, you're an idiot if you do, because you could just take a horse to go around it. And if you climb over that mountain, the terrain's going to be super boring, procedurally generated garbage. That's not this game. If you go and see a mountain and you're like, I wonder what will happen if I climb over it, I guarantee you're going to find something up there or see something along the way that just blows your mind. So, oh, yeah. It's not like, oh, here's an obstacle we're going to put in your way because, oh, you could find a way around it, or you could be an idiot and climb over it. You have to do both, because they've filled this world, and nothing is left to chance with this game. No stone is there because it was placed there by an algorithm. No tree is there because it was placed by an algorithm. Every tree you see in this game was planted by someone for a reason. So just keep that in mind as you're playing this game, because that's the kind of special care and love this game got. That games like, I'm not going to throw any games under the bus, but AAA titles on those other consoles, they don't measure up to this. They don't measure up to this. They'll have something different, but people are pointing to this Horizon Zero Dawn game, and I haven't played it yet, to say, oh, here's a game on PS4 that's just as good as Zelda is, it maybe even better.
It's certainly beautiful.
It's beautiful, but I don't think it's going to pull off what this game does. That I shouldn't say that without playing it, but just if you played these other AAA titles from 4 or 5 years ago, even from last year, I think games are going to change after this game, just because I don't think people are going to accept less after they've had an experience like this. Whoops. Nintendo just raised the bar for everyone. Good luck.
Yeah, I have no doubt that this game is going to inspire a lot of people. And yes, raise the bar. Absolutely. Yep. Completely. What would you say your first big holy crap moment was when you've been playing this game?
Well, I was surprised by a mini boss just in the middle of a field, and the way I thought I could run away and run far enough.
You're talking about that rock monster,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to avoid spoilers, but because it's on the plateau, I guess not.
It's on the plateau.
I know.
You're the one who set the rule about the plateau.
So, yeah, this rock monster. So evading him wasn't as easy.
Yeah, that was a holy crap moment, but that was not the kind of holy crap moment I was thinking. But yes, that was definitely a holy crap. That was a holy crap moment for sure.
So magical.
Yeah, that scared the poop out of me. Because that guy's super strong. He will kill you in one hit.
Yeah.
The first time you stumble on him,
and so the game's not afraid to put you in a bad situation and say sink or swim, literally.
It's not an easy game at all.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know about this rock monster. What did you end up doing? Did you defeat him? And what was your tactic? And how did you deal with it?
No, I did not defeat him. I ran, because I started with thinking, oh, I have, you know, he has what looked like an obvious weak point, so I figured I could attack him there. But I couldn't figure out how to get there. So I started to try to use my powers, you know, bombs, magnetism. Mm-hmm. Nothing affected this weakness. So I just...
Did you use your bow?
I did try to use my bow, and it did so little damage that I was like, well, I could stand here for, you know, a day and waste, I don't know, 1,000 arrows, or I could just run. So I ran, but ducking behind boulders to try to escape this guy and thinking I'm going to outrun him or outsmart him, it felt like he knew where I was hiding every time. So it was pretty fun. Holy crap, like, oh my gosh, this game is very different and special. Maybe when I found my first Korok, I was, because I was like, oh, here's a weird little area under this tree. Like, what is this? What, this is in the middle of nowhere. Oh, here's a rock under here. I'll just pick it up. And that showed me, oh gosh, they really planned this. They really thought this out. Like, they expected somebody to stumble on this very specific spot. How many more very specific spots like that exist in this giant world? And that kind
hundreds,
of,
I think.
That sent chills up my spine. I thought, well, oh goodness, how am I going to see everything if this random tree where this random spot has this random secret? Coming up on enemy encampments and trying to outsmart, you know, them, either stealthily sneak up on them or brute force melee, just run in like guns and Navarone, or am I gonna like try to use some of my powers to obliterate them, but then you know, am I gonna miss out on some treasures because I just blew up an encampment and incinerated everything? So
you can do that.
You can. So I love that the game, you know, doesn't hold your hand. And there wasn't one way to do any of those things. Mm-hmm. It was really up to me. And I could have avoided it altogether. I could have just swam around it or skirted around it. But it's...
Well, you could have. Yeah. But, you know, you want to explore
everything. The game is there to be played. And I felt like those kind of experiences, those little bite-sized moments... easily digestible, and you know, I'll take on this encampment. Okay, now I'll put my Switch down and do this other thing. I'll make dinner.
I can't because I've got like 5 or 10 other things on the horizon that I see there that I have to get
to. It's true, and I have like 2 side quests going and the main quest, and on your way to the side quest, there's an encampment, or there's another Korok hiding somewhere that you might want to find, or there's a cool precipice that you should probably check out because, hey, what's up there? They put that there for a reason. And I'm getting chills just talking about it now because just the amount of love that went into this game is just, it's special. It's very special. You feel it. It's like a big hug from the people that wanted to give you this experience. So I really love and respect that there, somebody out there thinks I'm smart enough as a player and adventurous enough to engage this game in the way that will give me the most fun and enjoyment. They could have easily just made this game half of what it is and sold 1 million copies, blah, blah, blah. This game could have easily been made without a physics engine. But can you imagine what we'd be missing? I can't. So I'm just very, very happy that it's all there.
Yeah, so am I. But going back to the holy crap moments I was talking about.
Yes, what was your holy crap moment?
Well, I mean, the first one was when I first played the game at E3 last year. And, you know, you step out and you see that huge open vista in front of you and see this entire world. And you know you can actually explore all that. That was one of the first ones. So, you know, I was ready for that. And I didn't really have that feeling, you know, experiencing it all over again when I played it on my own system. So there was that. Then, of course, there was that that whole scary oh crap moment when the rock monster appears. It's like, oh man, this guy's going to destroy me.
Yeah.
For the record, I ended up just using bombs against him, and that's how I took him out. Not very efficient, but it was pretty safe. I was able to just like hide behind trees and chuck bombs at him. But then, you know, like my one really super holy crap and all kinds of other words moment that I experienced, and this will probably count as a spoiler if you're still early in the game. You know, this was you know, off the plateau, went over this big old mountain. I'm looking down from the top of the mountain, and there is this giant dragon popping out of a lake, and it just comes out of the lake and flies through the sky and then comes back down to the lake, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like the most amazing thing I have ever seen. It was just absolutely phenomenal. And the music changes and everything. And it was all I could do to, you know, snap a screenshot or, you know, take a photo with Link's camera. So, man, that was mind-blowing. And then the last holy crap moment was, again, sort of a different kind of holy crap moment. And that was when the blood moon appeared for the first time.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
Like suddenly all that mist appears. Yeah. And it's like, what's going on? What's going on with my vision? Where am I? Something, did I wander into something bad? And it's like the worst thing in the world is about to happen and you are going straight to hell. And it's like, just, it's terrifying. And it really just amounts to that, oh, hey, all the enemies are respawning. But the way they present just makes it seem like the most horrible, terrifying thing in the world. And it's downright freaky the way they do that.
Yeah, I love that it adds this time element to the game. So if you're doing something arduous that does require you to beat a path to a certain area, and then you have to beat your way back once you're done. Gosh, if that
blood... Well, you never have to do that because you have quick travel options.
Oh, that's
available.
True. That's true. But that.
But yeah, you don't want to be in the middle of an enemy encampment when this thing happens.
You bring up an interesting point. There is quick travel in this game, but I challenge folks listening to not use it along with, and I know this is going to sound bananas, as much as you can, I would avoid using fast travel. I would avoid using the mini map. So there is a way to turn the mini map off in the options screen. Somebody on Kotaku, I'm going to shout out to Kotaku, somebody recommended in an article to turn off the mini map. And I thought, oh, let me just try to play without the mini map, which basically shows you highlights where you need to go. And it's on the screen at all times. It clutters the interface. And I really think that the game gets bigger once you remove that minimap. So I challenge you to turn the minimap off and do as little fast travel as you can, because it's made this world seem so much bigger.
I think that's crazy talk. I mean, I can see what you're getting at by turning off the HUD and just being able to take in, you know, how beautiful everything looks. But not using fast travel, that's nuts. The game is just way, way, way too big. I mean, I feel like it's going to take forever and a day to get through this game as it is. But without fast travel, man, if you're able to pull that off, more power to you. But I'm not going to be able to do that. It's just way, way too big.
Yeah, I used it once on the Great Plateau, and I thought, let me try this without fast travel and see.
I didn't use it on the Great Plateau.
Oh, you didn't?
The Great Plateau is small enough that there's really no reason to.
Okay.
But, you know, when you're on one end of the map and you need to get someplace that's, you know, like two regions away, then, you know, there's a pretty compelling reason to use that fast
travel.
Well,
I'm not far enough in the game to do that.
Yeah, you'll probably be playing a different tune later. I suppose if you get horses also, that, you know, speeds things up.
Yes.
That's another way to speed up the travel. Mm-hmm. But I haven't done a whole lot of horseback riding because, you know, it's hard. There's so much stuff to forage and grab, and, you know, things just speed right past. So exploring on foot is more fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of lamenting that it's hard to explore on the horse. The horse really is a way to get from point A to point B. Honestly, when I'm on a horse, I'm going to go around an encampment. I'm not going to try to take on an encampment because then I have to dismount to collect any treasure or to collect any drops. Also, we didn't mention this, but in this game, if you haven't played it yet, the weapon system is very interesting. It's a weapon system where they're basically all drops and...
Yeah, everything breaks. Everything wears out and breaks in pretty short order, yeah.
Don't fall in love with any of your weapons. They're all going to break. So if you have an axe for chopping trees, hang on to it and save it, because if you break it, you got to find another axe, or you're going to be chopping down trees with like a broadsword and messing up your broadsword.
It's not too hard to find another axe. That's the thing, is that there are always new weapons. Every enemy has a weapon, so you kill an enemy, and if your weapon breaks, well, that enemy is going to drop another
weapon.
That's right. So if anything, there's, you know, way too many weapons. You're never going to run out, it seems. So do you like that feature in the game?
I do. Do you like it?
Not really.
I like it because I think it adds a level of complexity and fun, because if I fall in love with a weapon, I'm going to play the game with that weapon for the rest of the game, or keep upgrading that one weapon. When you're swinging a big, bulky, heavy item, you really have to take into account the fact that you're not going to have an instant swing and swipe at a character, at an enemy. You're going to need this, like, you know, time to pull the weapon back and sling it. So
yep, there's even physics in the weapons.
Exactly.
So I think what you're getting at.
The physics with the weapons, you need to take into account a bigger weapon takes longer to swing and you don't have as much quick reaction time. But of course it does a heck of a lot of damage.
And you can, you know, knock back enemies with shields because you've
got
a super heavy weapon and things like that.
And
I do like that. I like the fact that it gives you opportunities to try out all these kinds of different weapons that you might not otherwise try.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, I'm not really sure if it really, you know, improves gameplay at all. And that was something I didn't like about Skyward Sword, is that your shield had durability, and so it kind of discouraged me from blocking a lot of times. And in this game, sometimes it's like, well, I don't, you know, really want to fight these enemies because it wears down my really good weapons, and I want to save these for later, so suddenly I find myself running around enemies instead of fighting them. And, you know, I know I'm going to get other weapons from them, but are they going to be good weapons? Not necessarily. So because it actually discourages me from fighting because the weapons break, I'm going to say I would have preferred if that feature weren't in there. I don't know how they would have, you know, balanced it. And, you know, having all these different kinds of weapons and all this huge variety of weapons and still not having them break. But I wish there was, you know, something else in there, because I just, you know.
Yeah, I see what you're
getting
at.
Like, you know, losing my great weapons and don't like, you know, fleeing a fight because of
it. Yeah, I've found myself in battle, my weapon breaking, and then, oh gosh, I'm having to turn tail to either reselect a new weapon or shoot to grab a weapon off someone else so I can start using it. And that said, like, if you hit an enemy and they drop their weapon, you'll see them scurry to go re-pick up their weapon before they come at, back at you, or they'll just start throwing rocks at you or something. So the fact that it works both ways is really cool, and it makes the battles feel so much more real and visceral. To hit somebody's shield or sword off, and then instead of them coming right at you, they're running to go get their sword back, or their comrade falls with a better weapon than they currently have, they'll turn and grab the better weapon to come at you with the better weapon. So those are the kind of things, and the attention to detail, that's another wow moment. Like, just to watch an enemy scramble to go pick up a better weapon instead of trying to throw stones at you, that shows some
yeah, that's a nice attention to detail,
real love and attention. Exactly.
Absolutely. I guess going back to those holy crap moments, though, the guardians, god, those things are also scary as heck. They are super intimidating. The black mist is totally freaky, but those guardians, you know, once you start seeing those, and you know, you see them, you know, start to line you up in their sights, and it makes that sound, and that beam is coming at you. Man, it's just the most horrifying thing. It's like, I am going to just totally be dead in just a second if I don't get to the right spot now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of intimidating stuff in this Legend of Zelda game, and that's one thing, how it feels, you know, very different from past Zelda games, whereas other ones, you know, usually you feel very empowered very early on, but this game is, you know, kind of intimidating in a lot of ways. And even after putting in, I don't know how many hours, I still feel like, you know, at any given time, I could just be utterly obliterated by either these guardians or maybe just a couple of strong enemies. You know, I still feel, you know, super weak a lot of the time. Although I did finally get some decent gear, so my defense is finally a little bit up, and that's a good thing. Yeah, everything is always coming at you, coming to get you. There's no rest for the weary, as they say.
I've died a lot.
At any time, things totally go south.
I probably died more in this game than I have in any previous Zelda game in short of, you know, it's a learning experience. Oh,
I've died more times in this game than like any Zelda in 15 years.
It's like, is this going to kill me? Oh yeah, it killed me. Or, oh, I could probably get out there, swim to that fish and get back to shore before I die. No, you can't. You're dead. And then the nice thing is the game's not super punishing. If you die, you're not super punished. There are autosaves everywhere. You can save anywhere, but the autosaves usually happen right before an event or, you know, you coming upon a certain area. So I always feel like I've only had to replay like a couple minutes worth of game to get back to where I was if I die doing something stupid.
Yeah, the checkpoints are pretty generous and frequent.
Yep. We haven't mentioned this, but the climbing feels so real. Like, I feel like I'm out of breath as I'm climbing, and there's a lot of climbing happening in this game. But the climbing physics feel really good. Link being able to jump, like, you know, there's a risk-reward. You can jump to move faster, but then your stamina is going to go down. If you run out of stamina before you get to the next ledge, you're going to fall off the cliff. So, you know, it's a lot of calculated movements getting from one place to another. Even just climbing to get apples, or jumping into a tree to get apples and try to collect those, you know, there are endless possibilities for...
Well, I haven't died jumping off a tree to get apples.
No, I haven't
that'd
yet
be a new
died
one for me,
coming off a tree. But I've died plenty coming off a mountain or going somewhere that was inhospitable to human life and trying to run back
out. I blow myself
out
up with bombs a lot.
Yeah, blowing myself up, because it's hard to gauge how big an explosion is going to be. But if there are those TNT barrels anywhere, honestly, I would try to be so far away that you could barely see those barrels, because those explode and throw fire everywhere. And once you're covered in fire, you're dead. Like, I haven't been in the blast radius, but then fire hits me and I'm dead. So fire killed me a lot. Cold killed me a lot. Falling killed me a lot. Water's killed me a lot.
Yeah.
I die more from the environment than I have from any bad guy.
Yeah, there's a lot out there that can do you in. Yeah, one of my favorite tactics, though, has been using those bombs. The fact that the remote detonation is really handy. And early on, you know, like I said, I don't really like wasting my good weapons. So if I can, like, lure an enemy after me, I'll, like, throw a bomb on the ground, like, okay, big guy, come here. And so I'll run away, and then he'll run up to the bomb, and they're like, okay, here we go, boom, and I blow him up. And he'll just keep chasing me, and I'll do that a few times until he's dead. And that's always fun and hilarious.
Yeah, so if you're listening and haven't played the game, bombs are unlimited, which is a new thing for Zelda. So that's so great to not have to worry about replenishing your bombs. You do have a waiting period between bombs, so you can't just spam the bomb
right
at enemies. And if you do launch a bomb, you know, you'll alert the enemy. If you're unsuccessful with your bomb attack, your cover could be blown and you're in trouble anyway. So
it could, but not necessarily. It depends on how far away you are.
Have you used the whistle for an offensive advantage? Because I have, to lure enemies towards me and then blow them away.
A little bit. Not very much. But yeah, that's a fun thing to do. Of course, the whistle is supposed to be there to call your horse.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can totally use it to alert enemies. Yeah, that's what I was about to ask you, actually, is if you had developed any fun tactics like that you've been using to take out enemies.
That's fun. I haven't figured out how to tame a horse that's wild. I know you're supposed to press L rhythmically as it tells you, but I can't get the timing down. I keep getting thrown. Do you have a secret?
A secret? Not really. I mean, they say to do it when you've got the horse to obey you. So if it's, you know, going the wrong way and then you get to go the correct way, then you hit L. If you get to stop when it's supposed to, then you hit L. That's how you build up your link between you and the horse, is by hitting it when you're doing it at the right times.
Because when I get on a wild horse right away, he just starts bucking and I can't figure out how to calm him.
Well, as you might have heard, horses that are a single color, a single solid color, are a lot harder to tame.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to go after ones that have spots or mixed colors. They're a lot easier to tame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after you have more stamina, then you'll probably be able to take on the tougher horses.
Gotcha.
So for now, you can just go for, you know, one with a spotted pattern. You'll probably be
okay.
And then, you know, eventually, yeah, you'll probably be able to do the other horses. But I don't think it's impossible at this point. I think you can get them as well, even early on. I suppose I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the amiibo as well.
Amiibo!
Of course, I did get all five of them, and they're all very nice. The Guardian especially is just huge in the package. The posable limbs are really neat. The texturing is fantastic. And it feels like it's worth the high $20 price tag. I'm also surprised how much I like the Bokoblin, but I'm not surprised how much I like Zelda, because her character design is really great, even if her pose is kind of basic. And Link with the bow is really cool too. He's really, really nicely detailed. Link on horseback is probably my least favorite because it's not to scale with the others. So if you just look at Link himself, he's really tiny compared to the other amiibo, but he's still a pretty excellent figure overall, all things considered. Also, all of these and all the past Zelda-related amiibo give out consumable in-game items and weapons, so they're actually very useful and are among the few amiibo where I can see myself making repeated use of their functionality. I suppose some people might think that's kind of cheating, but even just as collectibles, I like these amiibo a lot.
Cool.
Before we wrap this up, you said you did not get the DLC, correct?
Not yet, but now that I know how to get it, I will get it. Obviously, I could have looked online, but I'm so much into avoiding spoilers for this game. I didn't even want to know, you know, I don't want to know the names of anything in the game because I think that will give me, that I just feel like that'll give away certain things. I don't want to know that.
Yeah, I try to avoid all the spoilers as well.
X
totally.
Kind of objects or X kind of places. I just want to go in completely knowing nothing. And so I've succeeded in doing that, you know, to my disadvantage because I could be looking up recipes and looking up ways to beat enemies that I haven't thought of. And I've avoided certain interactions and encounters because I don't know what to do. And I've died several times doing it. So I'm just like, I'll come back later. So yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm trying to do with this game. And that's why I haven't yet gotten the DLC, but I'm going to get it as soon as we wrap up the show.
Well, let me tell you, there's probably no reason for you to
really
get the DLC. If I have one criticism about the game, it's that this DLC is super lame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we talked about,
well, for now,
all it does at this point is it puts three treasure chests onto the Great Plateau.
Mm-hmm.
It has that Switch t-shirt that just feels totally out of place.
Yeah.
It gives you no benefits. It's not like, it doesn't, you know, it just looks like a t-shirt. It's not like integrated nicely into some traditional Hyrulean designs or anything. It's just a regular old t-shirt like you would see in the real world. and doesn't, you know, give extra defense or anything. So it is pretty silly. And then the other two are just consumable items that I've probably, you know, already used up, and there's something that I could, I don't know, I think get without too much hassle.
Yeah, it's like arrows and something else.
I think something better than arrows, maybe. Yeah. At least it wasn't regular arrows. It could have been, you know, fire arrows, maybe. It's really pointless. I mean, the good DLC is supposed to come, you know, the first batch in summer, then the next batch a while after that. But yeah, one of those things is a hard mode, and I don't think that this game is going to need a hard mode. It feels hard enough as it is. Like you said, we're dying all over the place, and who knows? Maybe after we put in the time, after several months, we'll be like, oh yeah, I'm ready to do this all over again, only in hard mode. But at this point, I'm not feeling it. If anything, I feel like, you know, they need to put in like an easier mode for people who want to play it more casually. I'm happy with the difficulty the way it is, I think, most of the time. But boy, a hard mode, woo, I'm not going to be ready for that, I don't think.
I wonder if hard mode will also be like a mirror mode. What do you think? Is that a possibility?
I think it's possible, but I wouldn't bet on
because
it.
Because I don't know if I want to play this game again. I don't know if I want to play through the game again from scratch. Not for a long time, so... and then to make it harder and just have it be the exact same experience, I don't know. That'll be a tough call.
Well, anyway, slice it. It's a game that, so far, is nothing short of amazing. There's tons to see, tons to do, and, you know, it's not like 100% perfect, but I'm loving almost every minute of it, nonetheless.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's the best game I've played in so many years that I'm putting this up there with A Link to the Past, and I'm only 10 hours in. So what does that say? By far, one of my favorite Zelda experiences ever. Probably one of my favorite video gaming experiences ever. I feel like a kid again playing this game.
All right, that's saying quite a lot. Well, I guess that does it for this week's episode. But before we go, I do believe there is still time for a dramatic reading. This time, it comes from the manual of the NES game Gauntlet. The black cloud swirled over the heads of the chosen ones. Four had come this far, but only two could continue. The portal to their deadly challenge awaited. Foreboding screams rose up from the gauntlet. Morak, the evil one, cackled in glee as he watched the intrepid warriors prepare to enter his most terrible gauntlet. He knew they would never reach their goal. The sacred orb would remain forever imprisoned at the lowest level of the gauntlet. Without the sacred orb, Morak knew the mortals that inhabited Rendar would be helpless against his evil magic. Morak had plundered the lands and hidden his booty in the gauntlet. He garrisoned his henchmen in the gauntlet to guard it. There were ghosts, grunts, demons, sorcerers, and even incarnations of death himself. But could the sacred orb be in the gauntlet? No mortal knew for sure. If nothing else, the warriors could retrieve the treasures of Rendar that Morak had plundered and stored in the gauntlet. If only all four warriors could all continue on this, the last leg of their quest. Alas, the portal only allowed passage of two mortals. The warriors need your help. Choose from among them the two that shall continue. Become Thor the warrior, Thyra the Valkyrie, Merlin the wizard, or Questor the elf. The fate of Rendar is in your hands.
This is great. It's like you got paid by the word, and they're like, I'm going to use Morak Gauntlet as many times as I can because I'm getting paid by the word. It's so good. It's so good and so bad. I think this was one of those unlicensed games, wasn't it? Tengen?
It was Tengen, but the version I had was actually licensed. When it first was published, it was licensed, and then Nintendo and Tengen, which is a subsidiary of Atari, had a falling out.
Yeah.
So after that, it was released as an unlicensed cartridge, but I got the original release.
Crazy. So you have the original.
Yeah, I have the original licensed cartridge version.
That's worth something, isn't it? That must be worth something.
I've never looked into it, but it is certainly worth its weight in gold or something, just reading this clip from the manual.
For a little bit of trivia...
It is booty.
For folks out there, a little bit of trivia, the Tengen games have that weird cartridge shape because, yeah, they're unlicensed games, so they couldn't make it in the same style of the typical NES cart. So that's why they look so different. They have that weird...
they're made of black plastic, for one thing.
Black plastic, the angled edge.
Angles on them. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a little bit of video game history for you. There was a big court battle. Can you make video games for a system without paying the license fee if you reverse engineer how the games are to be made? The verdict was... You do not have to pay Nintendo a license if you figure out how to make a game for their system.
Yeah, one of those rare cases where Nintendo lost.
That's right.
Anyway, that does it for this week's episode. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be swell if you gave us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella.
See you real soon.
And our typically silent buddy, Link.
Come on!
We will see you next time.